Well, anyway, let me just introduce myself. My name is Jenny Eon. I grew up in Los Angeles. I moved to Oakland, tried to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, figured out that I hated everyone in California. Then I moved to Las Vegas, and I thought there were a lot of degenerates in California, and boy, was I wrong. Moved back to Oakland, but still have my stuff in Las Vegas. Kind of thinking of moving to Florida, maybe Germany. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. But let me tell you what I do right now. I am a sushi chef, and I do global cuisine for a company called Slippery Fish Sushi and Catering in Berkeley. I am applying for a job right now with Aramark to, I don't want to jinx it, but to be the sous chef for a Major League Baseball team. So cross your fingers for me. I hope I get the job. But even if I don't, I love what I do. I've been cooking. I started my career in corporate dining, cooking for an attorney's office. I've cooked at a lot of tech companies in the Bay Area, including Adobe and Square. You guys ever seen that insert on your phone where you could swipe credit cards? It's that company. Also worked for Advent, which is a financial management company, and a whole bunch of other, we have a ton of clients, Microsoft, Skype, Yammer, the Oakland Raiders, the Warriors. We cook for everybody who's somebody in Oakland. So I'm proud of my career. So even if I don't get the new job, I'm really happy with what I'm doing and the mentorship that I have right now at the sushi restaurant.
Well, suppose you're going to get the job with that A-League baseball team, which I assume that the A's, are you going to get the stadium too?
No, but I don't want to live in California. Like, if our contract is only for 2 more years. So I can move to Florida after that. Okay. So I just want to take the A's out with a bang if I can, and hopefully I'll get the job. But
the A's are going to be moving to Vegas in 3 to 5 years anyway.
So I might as well move back to Vegas.
I think
anyway.
That this will seal Raiders, that job A's, for you if we announce that we're going to put a brewery in there, a Great Basin Brewery, a little microbrewery in the A's stadium there too. That'll seal
what?
The deal.
Yes.
Seal the deal for
okay.
you.
Okay. I like that. So I'm really passionate about corporate dining. Anybody work in the corporate space? Sodexo, Aramark, Compass. Does anyone here cook? This is just me and you at this point. You guys just wait for the end of the lecture, then you can have your samples. Then I guess I'm the only one. Corporate dining is where it's at. If you guys have friends that are in fine dining, you need to tell them to convert to the dark side, because the work-life balance and the money just is unbelievable. I have worked also, though, in fine dining. If you look at sfeats.com, I have worked with 5 of the top 50 chefs in San Francisco, so I'm pretty proud of that in my career. Got burn marks all over my body to prove it. When I was in Vegas, I worked at the Palms Hotel and Casino. Hated it. Never want to work in a union again. Sorry, I'm just keeping it blunt. Let's see what else. I also did meal prep, and I worked in the nutrition department of Centennial Hills Hospital in Northern Vegas, and I did meal prep for a bodybuilder who was also a millionaire. It was amazing. Podcasting. The name of my podcast is Beer Talk Radio, and I kind of named it, you guys know Car Talk? Anybody? Okay, I kind of stole the name. So Car Talk was kind of the inspiration for my show. I remember being a little kid and listening to it with my dad, and I thought, how cool is it to have a radio show? And I've always had a passion for radio for a long time. So it took me a while. My dad kind of planted the seed, and I wasn't quite ready. I had too much going on in my life, but finally I broke down and I started getting some training on the audio software and getting some training on the technical aspects of podcasting, and then I just dove right in, and now I'm here talking in front of you guys and possibly working for the Oakland A's. So it's taken me somewhere. So podcasting, you know, it's not something I do for money, but the value that it's brought to my life has been incredible. Who is my podcast for? Well, I designed it for people like me, food and beverage professionals, people who work in back of house, front of house, general managers, servers, bartenders, any kind of lover of beer, beer geeks, entrepreneurs, marketers, salespeople, sales reps. That's who this show is for. I have a little bit of something for everybody. If you are a marketing person or a branding person, I have an episode called Las Vegas IPA, And my guest is an SEO marketing expert. So we talk a little bit about search engine optimization. If you're into sports, I do a great episode, Battle of the Bay, A's versus Giants. I go to the stadium, I think it was the second day after opening day, and I talk about the craft beers that are being sold at Oracle Park. If you are a brewer, I have episodes with brewers. I have episodes with sales reps for breweries. I have episodes, I have all kinds of bonus episodes. So there's a little bit of something in there for everybody. You can all learn something. The primary goal of my podcast is to make sure that at all times, I'm talking about profitability, sanitation, customer service, providing a unique customer experience, treating your employees right, learning how to manage crazy situations and deal with millennials. let's see what else. Leadership in general. So even though the podcast is centered around craft beer, it is also centered around all of the things that make a business successful, and I want us food and beverage professionals to learn from one another. Why are we here today?
We are here to celebrate the whole issue of beer. Beer unites. And you can see right here, it's proof.
Totally.
What better way to reference the hockey game tonight, too?
I'll drink to that.
Yeah, I'll drink to that, too.
Tom gave you guys some great information about some general information about the history of beer. I want to talk a little bit more about why craft beer is kind of important in the restaurant business, the food service business, and even just events in general. And then we're going to talk about how I choose to pair with food. So why do you need to be selling craft? Does anyone here own a restaurant? Does anyone here own a pub, a brewery?
Not yet.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna skip about 5 to 10 minutes of my presentation because I don't feel that it's relevant. I wasn't aware that I wasn't quite sure what the crowd would be, so I wanted to write for everybody. But if this isn't applicable to you, I'm just gonna skip it so we can start drinking. If that's cool. All right, proper beer tasting. First of all, I want you guys to understand your own palate. everyone's palate is different. There are some people who are more sensitive to aromas. They have a more developed palate. It's something you can develop over time. Some people are born with it. Some people are not. Your childhood diet and your culture has a lot to do with how you taste food and what your preferences are. Let's say you grew up in a Eastern European culture or in a Japanese or Korean culture. You're probably used to eating a lot of sour foods. You're probably used to eating a lot of kraut or kimchi, things that have spice, things that have vinegar. For a person like that, drinking something like a sour beer or a saison is almost palatable because they're used to kind of those flavors and kind of those sensations. Those of us who grew up on an American diet, we grew up on salt, sugar, and fat. So some of the more sour beers are not appealing to us, and that's why they don't tend to do well in the craft beer industry. We have a way to make it palatable if it isn't already, but I believe it is because you made it.
Just pointing out sour beer.
Okay. So your culture, how you grew up, that has a lot to do with your preferences. So not everyone likes craft beer, but not everyone has tasted that many varieties to know what they like and what they don't like. Your personal preferences also have to do will be affected by your environment. So the perfumes you wear, the cosmetics that you put on your skin, if you use chapstick or lipstick, that's gonna affect your ability to taste things, if you smoke, that's gonna affect your ability to taste things. I think most of you probably already know that. Reading a beer, what is it all about? It's not just about, you know, what you see on TV and what you see in the commercials is just people kind of doing this. Just like with wine, you do the same thing with beer, a little swirl. You know, you taste, and they go, right? And they all kind of look around and then they start writing shit. What does that really mean? What does that really mean? Oh, is that what woke you guys up? I had to cuss? All right, well, Argo, fuck yourself. I was just watching that movie, thinking about Ben Affleck. I don't know why. That was such a good movie. I don't know what that has to do with beer. But anyhow, so you're not just... What they're doing is they're checking for the taste, the aroma, something called mouthfeel, which is like kind, literally what it means, how it feels in your mouth, something called nose feel, which literally means what it is self-explanatory, how it comes up your nose. Is it aggressive or is it light? Can you almost not smell anything? Or do you smell a lot? Do you almost walk by and you're like, oh, I know what that is, like rotten chicken, you know what I mean? Like, you guys know from 2 feet away what that is, right? It's the same thing. Checking for clarity, the strength of the beer. Beers can be pretty crushable. The average crushable beer is about, what, 4%?
Well, 5%.
5%. Okay, so beers can range in alcohol content from 5%. I've seen as high as 12.
Well, it's crushable. I mean, you can go lower than 5%.
Average beer.
Average beer is, I think, 5 to 6%.
Okay. Okay, and then, but we've, you know, there are stouts and porters in this world that are like 12%.
Yeah, actually, yeast will start, I mean, because essentially you're trying to brew beer, and yeast is trying to reproduce in a system in their own excrement, excuse my expression, and which is alcohol is one of those and stuff too, so it starts killing itself. So you have to put more, you know, like alcohol-resistant yeast in there to get higher strengths. And brew's gotten up to about 20%.
Whoa. That's hard alcohol.
It tastes good, though. But by God, you got it. And then you can freeze part of it and enrich it. But that's just
okay. Canadian beer is generally stronger, correct?
Sometimes, but this us crafty crafters, man, we're, you know, I actually bought Jenny Lee a 12% beer from Great Basin as a kind of a gift. But
for special occasions only.
Yeah. But you can, but in general, it used to be, but now the, you know, us crafters have kind of screwed up the whole industry, which I'm proud of.
Got to make the rules. You got to break the rules, right? Yeah.
I'll drink to that.
I'll drink to that, too.
Yeah. Clarity, that is talking about how, literally, how clear the beer is. Is it opaque? Is it foggy? Is it cloudy? Or can you see right through it like wine or champagne? Bitterness, the average beer, would you say, is about 20 IBU?
Yeah, it is 20, I think.
But we've seen IPAs that can go up to, what, 150?
Well, you have to get above 100. You pretty much have to add some other extracts. It's actually the bittering units of beer called IBUs, International Bittering Units. It's a vague kind of a different calculation. But you can calculate you're putting 150 IBUs in a beer. But when you get it tested, you might be around 90. To get above that, you can actually add oils. And again, you're making more and more bitter. You get it so bitter, no one can drink the damn stuff. It's like tough to drink. Right. But oh my God, I got 150 IBUs in this beer, and it's kind of like Jolt Cola. Remember that stuff that didn't last long?
Oh,
they had,
yeah,
like 5 times the caffeine. Well, great, you have got 5 times
now
the caffeine.
Now you've given everyone
nobody
high
likes
blood
it
pressure.
But
and people can't drink it, right?
Right, exactly. But anyway, the IBUs again. Some IPAs are Ichthyosaur is about 46 IBUs, which is low. With
very
IPA
low. Yes, but I've seen
things. But
average
it's
IPA
very
about
drinkable,
80.
Malt balanced.
Yeah.
The hazy IPUs or IPAs right now are around 15 to 20 IBUs because they're going for other kind of hops.
Okay.
Or they're double IPAs up to 100.
Yeah.
Tectonic Events 100.
And with that, I mean, there's over 110 different beer styles according to the Brewers Association, or at least beer guidelines under those styles. So if you might not be a craft beer drinker because you're like, okay, I don't really like German beers, Dunkelweizens, Hefeweizens, Rauschbier, Oktoberfest, Marzens. And hey, all these kids are drinking the IPAs, but they're making my face itch. Or you could be like, you know what, this is just really expensive and this isn't worth my time when I can just have a Stella Artois and be fine with that. Well, what I want to let you know is be courageous. Be courageous, have courage. We have different types of craft beer. It's not just all the super bitter stuff. It's not the super European stuff. American styles are blowing up left and right, especially on the West Coast. There's cream ales. There's barrel aged stouts. So for those of you who like that thick, bitter Guinness, why not get a Guinness that actually tastes good and has good chocolate flavor and good vanilla flavor or good oatmeal flavor to it? Something a little thicker, something, you know, before bed, that type of beer. Smoked beers, so for those of you who like flavored beers, there's gluten-free beers. Pepper beers are really popular right now, am I correct?
Well, thank you, good you segued me into that too, because yes. Great Basin, as far as I know, one of our brewers, Eric McClary, may he rest in peace. He had Parkinson's disease, not on earth with us anymore, was one of the first in modern times to put chilies in beer, as far as you know. So he'd won the amateur competition gold medal. 1993, we were in the Great American Beer Festival, national championship, with the gold medal. Next year, it was four of the breweries putting chilies in beer.
Chili
and
Beso.
What's that?
Chili
You've
Beso.
Got a Chili Beso. So that the following year, we entered again, won the gold medal again, 2 out of 2 now. About 4 years later, now it's a lot more people putting chilies in beer. And we entered
it's
again,
very popular,
a gold medal again, 3 out of 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to retire from competition. We're going to give somebody else a chance. But a week from Friday, we're releasing it in 6-packs for the first time. The 3 out of 3 gold medals are Cerveza Chili Beso.
Ooh,
thank you for that segue
so
into the chili.
I love pepper beers. Has anyone had a cocktail with the pepper flavored vodka? Anybody have that? It's good, right? It's good to put that spice in there and that kick in there. I love pepper beers. There's one in Vegas. You know Banger Brewery?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're popular. They have one called Jalapeno Hef. Mm-hmm. There's
yeah,
honey
a copycat,
beers.
Though, but other than
I know.
That,
you're probably better.
No, they're good friends of mine. Yes.
There's honey beers. There's for you wine drinkers. We are trying to bring you into the fold. We have a lot of rosé ales. That's the new popular thing is rosé ales right now. So for you ladies, if you drink white wine, that might be a good introduction to craft beer for you. Fruit and wheat beers. For anyone who likes sake, there's sake yeast beers out there. So the possibilities are endless. You can have anything you want. It's out there, I promise you. Okay, so everybody's got to come. Yes, sir.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I was just curious. I just said to her, I was like, what is a craft beer anyway?
I'll let you understand. I'm offended. I'm offended. I'm not going to answer that question.
Listen, you know what, Jenny Lee? I don't know. I'm going to answer. I'm going to answer the damn question.
I
all right?
Craft
you
beer
you
all
can
the time, but I don't really know what makes it a craft.
It's
beer.
Not Stella Artois. It's right. Not Heineken.
And you know, again, that's a very, very good question. When we started out this industry, when we were here, Great Basin, there was 100 craft breweries in the United States, and we had to pass state laws in Nevada to get Great Basin going. And I look around, and since then, well over half of those are no longer here. So I feel good about that we actually were kind of in the ground floor. But craft beer, there's one definition that when somebody considers you're below 6 million barrels of production, which is 12 million kegs, you're a craft brewer, but I don't like that. It's kind of a personal definition. It's a craft brewer is someone who's making single batches, not blending, and they're independent, not owned by some mega brewery from the Philippines or Europe or somewhere else, South Africa, mm-hmm. And they're brewing from the heart. And I think that really shows the craft thing. You're not gonna be any blending any beers to try to get that consistent flavor. We're not going far the way not to offend anyone. We don't care about offending people. We're getting flavors that have bang and punch. And what Jenny Lee said, there's such a range of flavors, and you might not like one beer, but
there's plenty,
plenty
others
of
to
other
choose
things
from.
To too. Again, vanilla versus lots of other flavors.
In terms of conducting a proper tasting, there's some basic things that you guys need to know. There's a lot of different elements that go into it. I'm going to be really quick. It's 5:07. I want to wrap it up in like the next 10 minutes, so maybe we can get some tape.
Yep.
Some glasses on the table, and you start pouring in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I think we can do that stuff too. I think go ahead and do that too. I think maybe the best way is everybody has their own glasses to hold, and we can pour into those glasses.
Okay. Maybe
too.
Just start opening in like 5 minutes.
We can do that,
and
so
and
that would think it'll be more efficient.
Okay. Now for you guys, it's gonna be a 2-finger pour. Okay. Don't get greedy, but it'll be fun. No, just kidding. Pour till it's gone, because you don't want to lug this back home,
no.
Do you? All right. Pour till it's gone. All right, so that's what we're going to do. So there is the tabletop. So there's kind of a few steps in terms of tasting beer. Obviously, we're going to start with our nose and our mouth, okay? I want you guys to say two words with me. Ortho-nasal?
Ortho-nasal.
Retro-nasal.
Retro-nasal.
I'm going to turn to this side. Ortho-nasal?
Ortho-nasal.
Retro-nasal.
Retro-nasal.
Ortho-nasal is breathing in. Retro-nasal is either inhaling through your nose and exhaling back out through your nose, or inhaling through your mouth and exhaling back out through your nose. Ortho-nasal?
Ortho-nasal.
Retro-nasal. Okay, got it.
How many people have sucked in foam? that'd be.
All right, so the first sniff is kind of a casual sniff. It's just a tabletop sniff. If you can smell your beer from, I don't know, maybe 12 inches, 18 inches away, that's the first step, okay? Because now you're prepping your nose. You're coming into it. Second part, drive-by, just like with wine. Little swirl, swirl. Little swirl, swirl. Little swirl, swirl. Got it? Okay. Next is a swirl again, okay? And now your short sniff. This is where you're really gonna get your nose into, literally your nose into it. And the reason that we use AP glasses for proper beer tasting is because this taper here holds in the foam and it actually helps the aroma from, it catches a little bit of the aroma from coming out, okay? So it's kind of like it gives it a little hug. Gives the foam a little hug, gives the aroma a little hug. So that's when we do our short sniff into the glass. That next, taste. And then we're gonna inhale again, and as we're tasting, we're gonna retronasal. Okay, so we came in with an orthonasal, we tasted it, and then we breathed back out through our nose, and that's our retronasal. I have a variety of different types of vessels here. I'm gonna let you guys, I don't see the need to explain the dynamics of each one. The most important part is this AP glass. The same one that you use for wine tasting is what you use for beer tasting. All the other stuff, there are historical reasons behind the shape of the glass. I'm not gonna get into that, but you can pick them up and you can look underneath and see what type of beer it's for, okay? In terms of food and beer pairing, and this is really the meat and potatoes, and we're gonna wrap it up after this. This is the most exciting part for me. So when you're thinking about pairing food with beer, there's three things that I like to think about. How do we complement flavors? How do we contrast flavors? And how do we neutralize flavors? So this is kind of where we get into what we have on the table today. When I talk about complementing flavors, I'm talking about matching like flavors to enhance a single sensation. So if I was making lemon pepper chicken, I might consider using a lemon shandy. A shandy is half lemonade, half beer. It's kind of like an Arnold Palmer drunken version, okay? Complementing flavors, two things that come together. An example of how we're gonna complement a flavor is over here with this cherry sour. I didn't put the cheese out yet, but I've got a cherry goat cheese with a little bit of lemon, and that is going to be paired with our cherry sour. And what I'm trying to do here is create a new sensation to enhance that cherry flavor. We're gonna get two sides of the same coin. That's complementing. Contrasting is about matching opposing flavors to balance and create a new sensation. So when a food is too spicy, what do you guys usually do? Milk is a good one, good. Beer. Water enhances the heat, and you think it's cleansing it, but it's not. Milk is actually the right answer. Chocolate is actually the right answer. Those kind of neutralize it and balance it. What do you do when you're eating something really, really sweet? Are you gonna order something sweet to drink with it, or are you gonna order something maybe a little sour or bitter to drink with it, or squirt a little lemon on there if there's too much cream on that tart and you wanna take down the sweetness, okay? So it's about balancing, it's about temperance. It's, you know, sweet goes with sour, sweet goes with garlic, sweet goes with spice, spice goes well with cream. Anything else? I mean, there's so many.
Yep. And a lot of times, how you really do this and things too, the first thing I see people do when they're grabbing a beer or something, how's it taste? Like, you go like this. And, you know, our mouths and tongues, depending on who you want to talk to, might be able to discern 4 to 6 flavors, especially you go to origami and other mm-hmm, things.
Yeah,
like that
about
too.
Four to six. To eight,
the
yeah,
nose is so. Almost unlimited. Yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of like to be a dog sometimes. Those guys can sniff everything out right. too. But really, you taste with your nose. If you have a cold or something like that, and you say, oh, you know, this doesn't taste right. It tastes fine. You're not smelling it. You're not getting all that aromatics and things too. So the first thing you do is smell it. Then you might have the food, and you have to say, "Am I going to have the food first or the beverage first?" And that's a debate.
That's a debate. Yeah.
But you put it. Let's say you put. I like to put a little food and kind of taste that. Smell the beer, and then you taste it and get that blend. And first of all, is it a better? First of all, is it a new flavor, or is the food overpower the beverage? Okay, that's not a good pairing. Does the beverage overpower the food? Not a good pairing. Is the new flavor created a bad flavor?
Yeah.
Not a good flavor.
That's you have to taste, right?
But, however, the fourth thing is, you've made a new flavor, and it's better, and bam, we've hit the nail on the head.
Exactly.
And just, home
then
run.
Then we've got alchemy. Alchemy. You guys know what the word alchemy means? Okay. All right, so contrasting flavors, and for an example of that is that when he brought the Icky IPA, which is still an IPA, but it has a lower...
IBUs.
Has a lower IBUs. What I decided to do was do a creamy freshwater mozzarella with a little bit of paprika, because paprika is slightly sweet, so that will balance with the bitterness of the beer. And then I chose the freshwater mozzarella to kind of tone down the bitterness of the. I just repeated myself. It both the paprika. And the mozzarella will balance the bitterness of the beer. That's what I'm trying to say. Now, the last way that I usually think about pairing is very similar to contrasting, and you hit the nail. You talked about this for a second, but neutralizing, and that's when we take that super, super strong flavor, and then we add another flavor to neutralize it, to tone it down. We're not necessarily trying to create a new sensation or a new flavor. We're just trying to take that strong flavor and bring it back down so we can actually eat it and enjoy it. So for example, the milk stout. Stouts tend to be very bitter. The chocolate, we have chocolate. Chocolate is sweet. But chocolate in its raw form is very earthy. It's almost like the same flavor, almost the same smell as coffee. So the natural cacao bean is super, super bitter. The milk will neutralize the sweetness, but the sweetness will also neutralize the bitterness of the stout. So let's say this together. When we're beer pairing, we complement. We contrast. And we neutralize. All right, I can tell you guys are getting antsy. I'm ready to start drinking. I really want to get into these brownies right now. Just what I want to leave you with, and then I'll let you close. I have plenty of business cards here that you guys could take with you. If you wouldn't mind signing my email list so you guys can get notifications, or I can communicate with you about the podcast. If you don't give a damn about craft beer or making money or giving great customer service, by all means, don't write your name down. But if you're interested in those things, I want you to partner with me and be a part of the Beer Talk Radio family. I also assist other people with their podcasts. So you will see one non-beer thing on the table. This is my client, Stephen Skelly. He's been sports betting for over 32 years. He's made a lot of money in his lifetime doing that. I am his editor. Has nothing to do with craft beer, but if you want to hear a funny New Yorker talk about money, this is a podcast to listen to.
But he drinks beer.
Huh?
He drinks beer.
No, he's a wine drinker.
Okay.
But I love him. He's super funny. I love working with him.
Generally, I'm going to get like a 30-second thing about the beers and things. How many,
yes.
And you can be honest, this is a tight group here. How many don't like dark beers? Okay, quite a few there too. So I want you to keep in mind that a closed mind never gets fed. So we're going to think about this and things there too. Of the three beers we bought here, this stout, which is black and thick, and you can stand a spoon up in it, is the smoothest beer you're gonna taste tonight, all right? So you're gonna have to kind of like decide, okay, I said I didn't like dark beers, and that's fine, you may or may not, but keep them open mind, because this is, again, the smoothest. We just won the silver medal at the Los Angeles International Beer Festival. It's got 3-time World Beer Cup medals, 3 times Great American Beer Fest medals on this too. So keep your open mind, but that is the smoothest beer, it's the blackest, an IPA. What you're looking at is a whole lot of hops. Hops are bitter. They're flowers. They're aromatic. and things too. But you can get some bitterness, maybe some really nice pine citrus in this from the hops we use in this beer to make the aromatic. It's really aromatic. And the other one we have is a sour. Again, that's probably the more generally talked about that too. This is actually beer, it's a kettle soured beer that actually we throw a little culture into the mash tun, wait 2 days, the brewery stinks. We sparge it, and now we have some lactic and phosphoric acid in the beer naturally, and it's going to sour. We do barrel aged and sour and kettle soured beers. So keep in mind, the sour beers, when you taste the sour, you get acid in your mouth. The first sip, you go, oh my gosh, what is this? Because it just is a big contrast. Take another sip, because now you've tuned your mouth, and then you decide whether it's good. And the cherries actually add a nice sweetness to balance that sourness and things too. So again, this is a time, again, like I said, open mind never gets fed. So it's time to open up and try these. Yeah.
I don't want to cause bottlenecks, but is there an order that you can suggest?
I would go in a circle. I would pick up right here and go in a circle, start with the IPA, go into the cherry, because we're going to go from bitter and creamy to sweet and acidic. And then that will kind of cleanse the palate to get it ready for the milk and the chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the chocolate where brownies made with this beer at Great Basin. So they're, you use it in cooking. If anybody wants to cook with beer, it's a wonderful idea. Have a party.
Listen to my show if you want to cook with beer.
Exactly.
Okay, I have several beer pairing episodes.
And invite all your friends, a potluck, and everything has to have beer in it. So they just substitute something. The trick is, we're cooking with beer, especially hoppy beers, reduce that liquid. And you increase the bitterness, so you need a little more sweetener to balance it. That's the only hint. And listen to her show, but they're fun parties. Sorry about that. So,
is that icky bread?
No, I should have bought some of our ichthyosaur bread. We actually use our spent barley and ichthyosaur beer and create a bread called icky bread in our bakeries. And we have it in various restaurants in town. We should have bought that. I didn't. So.
No worries. Okay, that they can hand hold.
Okay.
This they can just scoop some on their plate and grab some
celery.
But I need something to pick those up with.
Do we have any tongs or something? Okay, we're gonna get some tongs there too. So let's get a glass and get some beer.
Let's start drinking.
I'll drink to that.
Over there.
Start drinking.
I asked where to start.
Yeah. Two fingers.
Yeah. Good question, though.
So we've covered
it. Here's the two fingers.